exploring is the spiritual dimension of Pesach. We got, I think, 45 minutes, is that right? So maybe if I try and talk for 35 minutes, then we have some questions. Now, since there are lots of fours in Pesach, like the four kosot, so I've divided things into four, and we're only doing just like, you know, a little bit of a very large subject. We're taking one or two basic concepts. We're going to look at a key aspect of the spiritual dimension of Judaism, which is Ahavat Yisrael. And we'll consider that in relation to the four sons or four daughters. We'll also consider the idea of Pesach, Yitziat Mitzrayim, as something which actually happens every day, which is in a famous text by Rav Mishneh Zalman of Ladi in Tanya. And we'll also have a look at the question of the wise son or the wise daughter, which relates to the whole idea of Pesach and Mitzvot, because Pesach is the concept of Kabbalat Ol. God took us out of Mitzrayim, and there's a certain sense from the point of view of Chazal that our gratitude to Hashem leads to everything else that we do. But we will be exploring the, hopefully, if we get there, the question of the wise son. First of all, let's have a look at some basic concepts. Now, I'm sure everyone here is very familiar with the idea of Mitzrayim and Meitzarim. Can you indicate by putting up a finger or something if you are aware of that whole idea? Mitzrayim, Meitzarim? Couple? Yes? At all? Or is everyone else shy? A few. You see, Mitzrayim, the word Mitzrayim means Egypt. And the word Meitzarim means limitations. Meitzar means like straight. So that is one of the ways. See, what happens in the Kabbalah and Hasidic teachings is that they take everything that happens during the Jewish year and they look at it as something which is really recharging some aspect of our soul, of the power of our neshama, really for every day in our lives. So although each festival is crucial in itself, it's always adding something throughout the year. So it's as if when we come to Pesach, our batteries are being recharged with a particular kind of energy, a particular kind of empowerment, which we then put in practice during the rest of the year. And especially with Pesach, you could say that with almost every festival, when you look at it in through a certain lens, there is something about Pesach which applies every single day. So the first thing is the idea of Mitzrayim, not just as a geographical country, but as the whole idea of Meitzarim, leaving the limitations of life. And now, so that might be an external limitation. People can feel they get out of Mitzrayim in all kinds of different situations. You know, it's, you finally get your PhD at last, you're out of Mitzrayim. but the chief enslaver of one's own self, one's inner self, one's divine self, the Nefesh Elokim, would be what? What is our chief enslaver? What is the real paro in our lives? Yes? Now, 50 years ago, the eight people weren't that shy.
The Yetzirah?
Yes, that's right. The Yetzirah is the thing that afflicts us. Or our ego, if you like. Yetzirah looks fairly identifiable. You know, it wants you to do something wrong. But our ego can get us into all kinds of problematic things. And as you go down the line, that becomes real identifiable negativity. But ego in itself already is a problem, even if it's trying to do something relatively good. And that leads to the Hasidic theme of bitul, which means selflessness. Like we have the idea of bitul chametz, right? So Thursday night is and Friday morning, we're going to do, say, two different nusraot of kol chamira. And one of the concepts that we use, one of the terms that we use is libatel. that the chametz, whether we found it, we didn't find it, should be libatel, should be as nothing. Now, in Hasidic thought, you have the concept of bitul, using the same root, meaning selflessness. The full phrase is bitul hayesh, the annulment, the nullification of oneself. And that's a very powerful concept, as opposed to the puffed up sense of our own ego. So that's like the bread is very puffed up, it's risen, it's full of its own self. And then we have bitul, the flat matzah. So what a kind of a graphic way of illustrating this, if you'd like to follow the image with me. Imagine someone is behind a fence where there are bars which are hemming them in. And you could say this bars of the Yetzer Hara, something like that. But the fat loaf of bread can't get through the bars, right? The bars are too narrow. But the thin matzah goes through very easily. So the thin matzah is able to be free from the oppressive dimension of the self, of the ego, of the Yetzer Hara. Okay, now that's a couple of basic concepts of many which we could look at, but we're just looking at those two. I want to go on to Ahavat Yisrael. Now, when we consider in your pack, you've got on the first page, it's called Avarim Hayinu. Then on the back of that, we have at the bottom of the page, Chacham Mahu Omer. Very beautiful idea. The Chacham Mahu Omer. Whatever a person is, that's what they express. They say it immediately. It comes out. We'll be looking at more detail at what he actually says. But let's just consider that you have, first of all, the Chacham and then the Rasha. So there you have Chacham and Rasha. We're identifying this person as the Rasha. And then we have the Tam, the simple person, and then the She'eino Yodea Lishol, the one who doesn't know how to ask. Now, you could say the simple person, the one who doesn't know how to ask, that's not such a problem. But the Rasha, the Chacham and the Rasha, that's a real polarity. And unfortunately, it very often looks like a polarity when you're looking in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about the Chaverim, the Talmidei Chachamim, and the Amei Haaretz, who you can't trust about this and about that. Rabbi Akiva tells stories. Kadana Havena Amadaara, when I was an Amaretz, when I was an ignorant person. And you have this kind of division. And then Rasha, of course, is considerably worse. Here he is, he's really, if we just look at the simple text of the Haggadah, Ma Vodah Zot Lachem, he says. Lachem Belo Lo, he's excluding himself. What is this service for you, not for him? He's denying the basic principle of godliness. You have to blunt his teeth. Now, of course, every modern seder today will have some kind of reinterpretation of this text. Now, hardly anyone in the sort of, you know, our circles, let's say, is going to present this text in its literal form. But the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose birthday happens to be tonight, the late Lubavitcher Rebbe, having just become Rebbe in 1950, and in 1951 he accepted, like officially accepted the role of being Rebbe, the following year, Pesach, he issued a letter addressed to the Bnei HaYeshiva, people who were studying in yeshiva. And he spoke to them about, it was a letter just before Pesach, and he spoke to them about the list of the four sons in the Haggadah. And he says, why is it that the author of the Haggadah put the Chacham first, and then the Rasha, and then the other two? Why is the Chacham, why the Chacham and the Rasha like sitting next to each other? And he gave a very interesting explanation. so that they should talk to each other. Because the problem in 1950 and for many years later was that straight after the Holocaust, there was a tremendous polarization in the Jewish community. There was a feeling of the few who had been saved from the Holocaust, who were Orthodox, learned, Talmidei Chachamim, and then there was everyone else. And the few were trying to keep themselves very separate and pure and pristine, and it led to an enclave form of religiosity, which still exists. And what the Lubavitcher Rebbe was trying to do was to deconstruct that enclave. He was saying, yes, we've got to be 100%, we've got to have all the spirituality and chumrot that there were in Eastern Europe. Yes, we've got to transport it into the modern world, the Western world of the United States, England, everywhere else. But it has to be in such a way that the chacham and the so-called rasha are sitting next to each other, are talking together, are able to communicate with each other. And that is the concept of Ahavat Yisrael, of seeing beyond the appearances of the person. In fact, I was amused and pleased this morning in the Vizhnitz Hasidim, the shul of the Vizhnitz Hasidim in Stamford Hill. So an older person was talking to a younger person. So these are both people very much of the Haredi world. And the younger person is saying, what does it mean, like they're really speaking in Yiddish, you know, what does it mean Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox? I mean, what are we? Are we Orthodox? And the other one said, no, we're ultra-Orthodox. There's ultra-Orthodox, Orthodox, and he gave like a couple more categories. And then he said, but they're all Jews, which is wonderful. Because that is, in fact, the whole point, that whatever ism they create around themselves, they are still all Jews. There is the Nekudat HaYadud inside every Jew, however much he or she might at some point disguise it. So Ahavat Yisrael is perceiving, see, the spiritual dimension of life in its most basic concept is to be able to look at existence like the table in front of us, the tables, and to be able to see that there is a spiritual life force which is giving existence to that table. That everything exists through a flow of energy, of divine energy that comes from Hashem, and that divine energy makes everything in the universe exist, so much so that the Hebrew word for any object is actually its neshama, it's its soul in some sense. Sorry, Marina, could I possibly have a glass of water, please? So that is the basic aspect of a spiritual perspective. And the Zohar, Kodesh, the Holy Zohar, presents all kinds of dimensions of the spiritual energy, the idea of sfirot, olamot, divine emanations, Kabbalistic worlds. But the crux of it is that beyond the physical appearance, there is a spiritual essence. Now that's even more so when you're looking at another human being, and especially at another Jewish person who is our brother, our sister. Raka gufot mechulakim. Thank you very much indeed. That each person has this neshama, and we should try to be sensitive to it. So whatever the problem that is exhibited in the external aspect of the person, you relate to the neshama, and therefore you're able to break through all these different hierarchies and pigeonholing, and whether they're chiloni or dati. The chilonim are not chilonim. And you have to be able to see through all the pigeonholing categories and see the essence inside. In fact, My daughter, one of my daughters is on Shlichud in Sweden, in Gothenburg, and running Chabad of Gothenburg. And she was giving a talk and trying to explain how something that could be a transgression, an avera, could actually be an expression of a mitzvah or of something positive. So she described an Israeli woman who came to Sweden with a Swedish man who's not Jewish and is living there with that non-Jewish man. And one day she decides she's going to have a tattoo, which is also forbidden by the Torah. So she's thinking, what should she have as her tattoo? Am Yisrael Chai. She somehow drew that, I don't know, the non-Jewish tattoo artist was able to engrave on her, wherever, I don't know. Am Yisrael Chai. So there you have Shnei Hafachim, you know, two opposites. But that is the Nekudat HaYadut, which is in every Jew. Okay, now let's come to the idea of leaving Egypt every day. Now, we have a later part of the Haggadah in this handout where it says, V'chol dov adov. I'm sorry, the pages are numbered, which would have been an enhancement. It's the last page of the Haggadah in our pack. And it says right near the bottom, penultimate paragraph, V'chol dov adov. Chayev Adam lirot et atzmo ke'ilu hu yatsa mimitzrayim shenema vihigadet alavincha bayom ahu lemo bavu ze asa Hashem li betzeti mimitzrayim. Now, can I ask a response? How do you understand this phrase? When you are going to be saying it on Friday night, Motzei Shabbat, the two Leil HaSeda, unless you're in Israel, how do you explain this phrase? Let's say you're running the Seder or you're making comments. What does it mean? Behold, over dawn, every generation, a person has the duty to see himself as if he went out from Egypt. Any suggestions?
And find your own way to relate to that and try and, you know, whether it's drawing parallels in discussions, or even if you're, you know, doing activity for the kids, you know, fill up two bowls of water and walk in between them or something. Just to, sort of bring it down to earth for everyone, because it's something that happened so long ago.
So it happened long ago, and we want to make it relevant to the present, and so therefore what this is emphasizing is that a thing that happened long ago is actually relevant to us. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Any advance on this? I mean, how? Yes?
I think it's more than just making it relevant. It's kind of an attempt to feel the emotions and the feeling that they were feeling when they were brought out, and the feeling from going so low to kind of to such a high, and to try and comprehend what that must have felt like. And kind of, I think it's more than just making it relevant, it's putting yourself there.
Right, it's putting yourself there. So there's some sense in which, although it happened 3,300 years ago, something like that, but in some sense, could you say we were there, something like that? Yes, is that, and that how you generally relate to it? Yeah, I mean, the yes? Yes?
I think it's also that the fact that God didn't just take us from slaves to being not slaves, is the fact that he took us from slavery to freedom. So it's that whole process of that everything he's doing to take us into that sense of being free and like kind of elevating us to a higher level so that we feel that we can actually do something with our freedom. Mm. And so relating that to what we do today, that everything that we go through, even though it seems that everything that we have, it can be a sense of slavery, so being able to take that and feeling free from it.
Right, okay. So therefore we have something that happened a very long time ago, but there are different ways, some very interesting, in which we can like locate ourselves in that. And as it goes on, it says, Lord Habotini Bilvadga, La Kadosh Baruch Hu, not only our ancestors did Hashem redeem from Egypt, Mimitzrayim, Ela Afotanu, Galimahem, but also we ourselves, we've also redeemed. And you know what I sometimes say, they say that, well, If we hadn't been, if the Jewish people hadn't got out of Egypt at Pesach time, then we would still be slaves there. So someone might say, yeah, but the Egyptian Empire finished long ago. Yeah, but if we had still been slaves, that would have continued. So there would have been the vast Egyptian Empire. We would have been stuck. So all this is like reading it into the past. Now, I'd like us to try and read together the next page. I'm not quite sure how it works, because it's all printed double-sided, which is a wonderfully clever machine, but very confusing. Okay, it says Likutei Amarim at the top, which actually is the same as the name Tanya, which is a book by Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Ladi, printed around 1800, a little bit before. And we're looking here at Perek Mem Zayim, the 47th chapter. Would someone like to read this in Hebrew? Do you like to, anyone like to read it? Yeah? Lama lo? Vihine? Okay, can you tell me, are there any differences between that and the Nusach of the Haggadah, which of course comes from the Mishnah in Pesachim? Any differences? Chol Yom Bayom. And? Hayom. Right. Not only once a year at this, or twice a year at the Seder night, but every single day, in every generation, every single day, a person should see himself or herself as if he went out of Mitzrayim today. So each day of the year is a day for going out of Mitzrayim. Now, you see, this relates to the way of seeing the Chumash, not only as the historical record of the Jewish people and of the world and the whole nature of existence, but also it's the psychological map of each person, and it's the journey that we go into Egypt, we come out of Egypt, we come to Matan Torah, we come to Eretz Yisrael. That is all the personal journey of the individual. It can be a journey in their whole lifetime, or it can be several times in their lifetime, or it can even be every single day. So here we're looking at the concept of going out of Egypt every single day. Now, you have here the text in Hebrew, and the next couple of pages are the same text in English. So I'm going to just read it and translate it for the sake of brevity of time. Vehi yitziyat nefesh elokit. See, I'm reading from where we just stopped, the third line down. This is the going out of the divine soul, mima'asa haguf, from the prison of the body. Now, the body has many qualities. The body is really holy, and the body can express tremendous holiness. But at the same time, the body has opposite qualities as well, relating to mishcha dechivya, which means the skin of the serpent, relating to the serpent in Gan Eden, which introduced a whole problematic aspect to the body. The ta'avot, the desires of the evil of the Yetzer Hara, and so therefore that then becomes an aspect of ourselves which we have to struggle with. And that is in a sense imprisoning us. But we can go out of that prison. Likalel b'yichud or ein sof baruch hu. To be absorbed in the unity of the radiance of the infinite. Ein sof. The word meaning without end. It's here is Roshei Tevot, Aleph and Samach. That is the infinite meaning God, even beyond any names of God. Ein Sof Baruch Hu. Al Yedei Esek HaTorah V'Mitzvot Bichlal. Through any kind of Torah study, it was so beautiful coming in this evening, seeing everyone sitting learning Torah. Very, very beautiful sight, must have. So that was actually a moment of freedom. Because at that moment, the person is wrapped up in trying to understand that piece of Torah. And any mitzvah that we do, in general, at that moment, there is a spiritual freedom for the divine soul. Ubefrat, and especially bekabalat malchut shemayim bekriya shema. In accepting the yoke of the kingdom of heaven, when we say the Shema, שבא מקבל וממשיך עליו, ייחודו יתברך בפירוש. Because at that moment, it's as if we're drawing on ourselves the oneness, the infinite oneness of God. Ba'omro, when we say, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is our God, and Hashem is one. Now, he underlines this Hashem Elokeinu, as it's explained previously, Ki Elokeinu, the word Elokeinu, that we say the word Elokeinu, our God, in the Shema, Hukamo Elokei Avraham. It's like we talk about in the Shemona Esra, the God of Abraham. Elokei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Lefi Shehaya Batel, because Avraham was nullified. His self, his ego was nullified, right? We learned this word Batel, Bitul. V'nichlal b'yichud o ensof baruch hu. And he was absorbed in the unity of the radiance of the infinite of Hashem. The infinite radiance of God. So what he's doing, you see, Hasidic writers often do very shocking things. He's telling us, reading this text, that when we say Hashem Elokeinu, it's Hashem is our God, like you can say the God of Abraham. Now surely Abraham is up there and we're down there. You know, Abraham is this incredibly great person. How can we compare ourselves to Abraham? He explains. Rag she'Avraham zachar lezeh b'ma'asav. Abraham, he achieved this through his own merit and his actions, v'hiluchu b'kodesh, and his advancing in holiness, mimadrega lemadrega, from one level to another. Kumo shekatuv, v'yisa Avraham haloch v'naso ha'negba, as it says, that he traveled to the south towards Yerushalayim, which also means spiritually, he was going to higher and higher spiritual levels, and he's like cutting the path through the forest. And we are following the same track. Aval anachnu yirushu matanahu lanu. It's an inheritance. It's a gift that we have. Shenatan lanu, that Hashem gave us et Torato, His Torah, v'hilbish ba'aretzono v'chochmato yitbarach, and Hashem put His wisdom and will in the Torah, ha'meyuchadim b'mahuto v'atzvuto yitbarach b'tachlit ha'yichud, which are totally, totally unified with Hashem. So in other words, in the Torah is Hashem, kud shebrichu v'orayta kul v'yisrael kul echad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah and the Jewish people are one. They're like one unit. And so therefore, when we are studying Torah, hareze ki'ilu natan lanu et atzmo kevyachol, it's as if God gave Himself to us. So therefore, when we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, at that moment, it is a sense as if God is giving Himself to us totally in the Shema. It's a very, very beautiful idea, and it's something to bear in mind during the Shema. And in the rest of the text that we won't read now, but he goes through a number of other psukim, particularly in the Amidah, one in Sim Shalom, Ki ba'o panecha natata lanu Hashem Elokeinu. With the radiance of your countenance, you give yourself to us, Hashem, O God. So that Hashem is giving Himself to us. And so it's God giving Himself to us, and He uses this concept and shows in a different number of different occasions and it ends off at the end of this paragraph, the end of this chapter, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, at the end of the Shema. Now, what he shows over here, why do we have? See, he was a halachist. He wrote the book Tanya, and he also wrote the Shulchan Aruch Harav. And so he says, why do we have the third paragraph of the Shema? Which is quite an interesting issue. Even the Haggadah itself discusses whether or not that third paragraph should be said in the nighttime when we say the evening Shema, the whole piece from Rabbi Elozer ben Azariah. And the actual halachic reason why the third paragraph is there is because, does anyone know? I mean, you can look at the text over here. See it here, yes?
To remember going out of Egypt.
That's right. Because it mentions going out of Egypt. That's the general relevance of the third paragraph. The third paragraph is about tzitzit. So why should we mention one mitzvah tzitzit in the moment of the Shema? The reason why we say it is to remember going out of Mitzrayim. And the relevance of remembering going out of Mitzrayim at the moment of saying the Shema is, according to this author, because saying the Shema is going out of Mitzrayim. So every time we say the Shema, we're going out of Mitzrayim. So we've done Myra, but that's Kriya Shema Lamita. We'll go out of Mitzrayim then again. Okay, so that is three of our four things. Let's see if we can tackle the fourth cup. Now this actually goes back to the question of the Ben Chacham, but we're going to look at that question in the pages of the Chumash. Because you understand, of course, that the four sons are all mentioned in the Chumash. And the first passage is in Parshat Bo. Interesting. I wrote something in green pen and it didn't come out. So it's supposed to say Parshat Bo. And you can see there, Pasuk Yudalet, V'haya ki yishalcha bincha macha lemor. You can see that? It will be when your son will ask you tomorrow, that means later, Mazot, and he'll say, what is this? Va'amata elav, and you'll say to him, B'chuzik yad, hotziyanu Hashem Mitzrayim, God took us out of Egypt, mibeit avadim, from the house of slaves. And then he goes on a little bit, and Rashi, look at this, Yudalud, the Rashi, ki yishalcha bincha macha. Skip a couple of lines. Mazot. Ze tinok tipesh. This is the simple child. She'ene yodeh lahamik she'elato. He doesn't know how to ask a deep question. V'sotem. And he puts it in a very simple way. V'shoel mazot. And he asks, what's this? Uv makom acher. And in another place in the Torah. Hu omer ma ha'edut v'achukim b'mishpatim. What are the testimonies, statutes, and mishpatim? Harei zot sheilat ben chacham. That is the question of the wise son. Dibra Torah keneged arba banim. The Torah spoke relating to four sons, the four questions. Rashav v'sheini yodeh lishol v'ashoel derech chochma. Right, so we've got all these four sons. If we can move on a couple of pages, we'll come to the place where we have the question of the wise son, as it is in the Haggadah, as it is in the Torah, not in the Haggadah. If we just recap for a second what it actually is in the Haggadah, we have Chacham Mahu Omer, Ma Edut V'Chukim Mishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Etchem. That we're going to see in Vaitchanan. Va'afata emolo ki ilchot ha-Pesach, ein maftir inach ha-Pesach ha-Fikomen. You tell him the laws of Pesach, and you tell him the last law. Once you've eaten the Korban Pesach, you can't have any dessert after. Okay, now let's have a look in Vaitchanan. And it's verse 20. Ki yishalcha vincha macha lemor. Do you see that? When your son asks you tomorrow, in the future, and he asks, Ma ha'edut v'achukim b'mishpatim, what are these testimonies, statutes, and laws, asher tziva Hashem elokeinu etchem, which Hashem, our God, commanded you? Now, it's an interesting question. One of the issues about the question is, there's a certain similarity to the question of the Rasha, who says, Ma avodah zot lachem. He's like saying to you, and the Rasha also, and the Chacham also says, Etchem. Seems a little bit similar, which maybe can be explained. Va'amata levinchan, you should say to your son, Avadim ayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Mitzrayim. Va'yotzeinu Hashem in Mitzrayim b'yad chazaka. There is, now, where do we say in the Haggadah, Avadim ayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim? Do we say that in the Haggadah?
Yeah, at the beginning of Magid.
Right at the beginning of Magid, that's right. The child asks for four kashas, and immediately the Haggadah launches into Avadim Ayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. According to this verse in the Chumash, It's actually the answer to the Ben Chacham. So the Ben Chacham is listening to the Seder all the way through, and the answer to him begins, Avadim Ayinu, and it ends up with you giving him a digest of all the laws of Pesach. You sit down learning the Mishnah Brura with him, and you understand clearly what are the laws of Pesach, and until it comes to the end. But let's look at this in slight more detail. The difference between the Ben Chacham and the Rasha is the Ben Chacham, can you see a difference in the very way he is asking? Is there a way that he's not excluding himself? In the very first Pasuk, Pasuk Kaf.
Hashem Elokeinu.
Yes, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem our God. He puts himself together with everyone else when he says Hashem Elokeinu, but nonetheless he's talking about the people as you. So there is a discussion by the Lubavitcher Rebbe of this whole concept, analyzing what is the question of the Ben Chacham. He said this in 1973, and on this day of Yud Aleph Nissen, actually, he said a discourse, and just recently I studied that discourse, and I thought it was very fascinating. Now, this idea of Eidut, Chukim, and Mishpatim, this three kind of mitzvah, you're familiar with this, I assume. Eidut are mitzvot, which are testimonies, like Pesach itself. It's a testimony that we went out of Mitzrayim. Shabbat is a testimony that Hashem created the world. On the other hand, Chukim are statutes which are beyond understanding, whereas Mishpatim are judgments which every nation has something like that. Do not steal, do not murder. Might not be exactly what Jewish teaching says, but that kind of thing. The Gemara speaks about, if we hadn't had the Torah, we would learn modesty from cats, and so on. It gives a whole list of ways we would learn different aspects of Mishpatim. The way the Rebbe analyzes this, the Chacham is actually asking a very profound question. He's asking about the whole nature of Jewish law. Why should Jewish law be so fixed in practicalities? Judaism's a very profound spiritual religion. We're relating to infinite godliness. And yet, when you come down to it, what is it? It's you got to do this and you mustn't do that. And there's a measure, we come to Pesach, you know, how much matzah have you eaten? Have you eaten the right shear? And there are different opinions what the right shear is. Are you going according to this view? That? Why is it all in these practical concepts? And that's the power of his word, etchem, you, as opposed to the avot. The avot, Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rachel, Rivka, Velea, they had a kind of very spiritual kind of Judaism. It's true, the sages tell us that they kept the whole Torah, but it was as a hidur. What we generally see about them is that Avraham Avinu had tremendous love of God. He and Sarah together, they invited people, they talked to them about God the Creator. Okay, they were communicating the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, but it's all like really a very spiritual kind of Judaism. Then we come finally to Matan Torah. We're given all these itsy bitsy rules with measurements, with this or that, how much does the matzah weigh and how big is the lettuce leaf and things like that. Why? That's the question of the Ben Chacham. And the answer comes out in the verse 24, Kaf Dalet, over the page. Vayitzavenu Hashem lasot. Hashem commanded, this is all part of the answer to the Ben Chacham, Hashem commanded us to do it, kol ha-chukim ha-ele, all these statutes, doesn't call them Eidut and Mishpatim and Chukim, the way the Ben Chacham did in his question. In the answer, we just call them statutes, because you know every mitzvah, even if it seems that we might understand it, it's really beyond our understanding. Because every mitzvah is a connection with Hashem who is infinite. The word mitzvah itself, the Hebrew root, tziva, means command. But there's an Aramaic word, tzavta, which means connection. A mitzvah is a connection with the infinite God. Lira et Hashem Elokeinu. To reach awe, yira is an exquisite, infinite kind of relationship with Hashem, which the Kabbalists, the Hasidim, speak about, Yira'ilah, the upper fear, a fear which is awe, which inspires a person in the most incredible way. Now, if you want to be inspired and illuminated in that way, which is the real spiritual dimension, how do you do it? Through the practical mitzvah. Because it's the practical mitzvah which actually bond us to the essence of Hashem. And that is what you try to explain to the Ben Chacham. That the reason why the Torah consists largely of practical mitzvah is in order to bond our neshamot and our bodies, for that matter, to the very essence of infinite God. And it's through the mitzvah. You see, the mitzvah is for the practical side of the person. And if you're trying to lift up along a huge pile of things, you take a lever and you put the lever at the bottom of the pile, and with that you can lift the whole thing up. So the bottom of the pile is our practical action. So if our practical action is elevated according to the Shulchan Aruch, then the whole person can be. And then you have to give a little bit of effort to have the right kavanah in the action. And one aspect of that kavanah is that every single mitzvah is really like a chok, like a statue, which comes from Hashem beyond our understanding. We reach beyond our understanding to infinite bond with Hashem. So this is an attempt to convey a few little elements of the spiritual dimension of Pesach. Hopefully there's a couple of minutes left for questions or comments. Everyone's stoned out of the mouth. You all agree.
I've got one small question. It might just be nothing, but when the Tam asks a question in the Torah, the answer they give him is "Bechozek Yad Hutsiano Hashem Yitzayim Et Avadim," and but it's worded differently in for the Chacham. It says "Avadim Ayin Yofal Yitzayim Yitzayim Hashem Yitzayim Be'achazkai." Is that just literary, or is that another sort of meaning? Is one simpler understanding, or is one?
Yehuda, I'm so pleased you mentioned this, because I forgot a whole thing.
Sorry, guys.
The Kabbalists tell us that in fact the question of the wise son is a very reasonable question. How can possibly physical action have such spiritual power? The answer is Avadim Hayinu Be'eretz Yitzchayim. The fact that we were slaves in Egypt, and Egypt was called Ervat Haaretz, the most impure place in the world, and we were slaves there for a very long time, we had the effect that we had was to purify the physical dimension of existence. So that from then on, physicality could carry spirituality. And that was the real preparation for Matan Torah, when we were given mitzvot, which enter into the physical life of a person when we eat, everything else that we do, it's all part of Kedusha. Potentially. So therefore the Avadim Hayinu, the Pharaoh of Mitzrayim, is a very important element in this whole story, which we give over to the Chacham particularly. Okay, so 50 years later.